You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes.
Hey guys, you're watching the Best Practices Show. We're going to take a look at the best business practices from the best dental practices all over the world. Crazy special week. We are at the Seattle Study Club Symposium, 25th Anniversary Legacy Tour here in Palm Springs, California at the La Quinta. World-class educators and some of the best clinicians in the world, and you're going to see that in a minute. These guys are amazing. You do not want to miss this. So do me a favor, hit the share button, and we'll see you in a few seconds.
The Best Practices Show with Kirk Barrett is brought to you exclusively by ACT Dental, the ultimate provider of dental practice management solutions for dentists and their teams. ACT Dental is committed to helping you build a better practice and a better life. If you're looking to grow your production, motivate your team, get back on track, and create the practice you've always dreamed about, look no further. Give us a call at 800-851-8186 or visit us at actdental.com.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Best Practices Show. We are out here for the 25th anniversary of Seattle Study Club Symposium, and a fabulous setting with some of the best thinkers, clinicians, educators in the world. And today is no exception. I got some dear friends on today. And today we're going to be discussing the oral surgery direction overall. Philosophy, vision, what we see in interdisciplinary dentistry and study clubs all over the world. And I have so many questions for you guys. But first, before we get started, I want you guys to introduce yourselves, share with the audience who you guys are, where you practice, and maybe just a little bit about you.
So my name is Dr. Matt Kepke. I'm from Morgantown, West Virginia. I have a practice, Appalachian Oral Surgery Center, in my hometown of Morgantown, West Virginia.
Awesome.
Darren Pretzel. I'm ex-Air Force. I guess I'm still Air Force. I did 13 years active duty and still doing reserves, and now I'm practicing private practice in Hot Springs, Arkansas. I do a lot of face cosmetic surgery. I do all oral surgery stuff, so, you know, a little bit of everything. Yeah. And I own a fire truck.
And you own a fire truck? Why would you buy a fire truck?
And a restaurant. And a restaurant.
I'm Rob Naples, oral and maxillofacial surgeon in Round Rock, Texas, which is North Austin. Love these guys, and just proud to be here with Kurt.
Hey, thank you, buddy.
Nice. Nicest thing I've ever heard. I'm Marty Wade from True North Oral Surgery and Implants, maxillofacial surgeon, and been in practice now for 32 years, and these guys recharge my batteries every time we come.
Yeah, it's true.
I'm Rich Oakley. I'm an oral surgeon in Kansas City on the Kansas side. I've been in practice since 1993, went to University of Oklahoma, Boomer Center. And director of Seattle Study Club for 20 years now. So yeah. This is my 20th symposium here.
Awesome. Awesome. And I'm going to go back to what you said, Rob. Like, I want to know why you guys are truly here, other than what you shared. Like, this is an important meeting. This is a week where you come to get to see the best speakers in the world. You guys are directors of your own club. So give us a little perspective on why you're here and, you know, what's your why behind this meeting?
So for me, I think you directed that this way. I'm an OMS that's still super proud to be a dentist. A lot of times, you know, that gets lost. And what do? We live in a gray area between dentistry and medicine, and a lot of people don't completely understand it. But we're firmly rooted in dentistry and, you know, understanding as much as we possibly can about what our teammates are capable of and what's possible on the cross side, ortho side, perio side, and how we fit into that complex array, you know, is here. plus the recharging of the friendships. This is my 15th consecutive symposium. I wouldn't miss it.
Yeah.
It was on the calendar, you know, immediately, and just love being here.
Yeah, and we
look forward to it every year.
A couple of people mentioned this earlier. There's not a lot of handshaking here. You get hugs. Like,
yeah,
this is hugs.
It's
yeah.
Whether you want them or not. Just happens.
The normal hug protocol is squeeze, pat, pat, release, but there's longer than that.
Yeah, I broke Ricardo Matrani's ribs a couple years
ago.
Two of his ribs with a big bear hug.
Absolutely.
Not recommended.
Yeah. So, other perspectives on what?
You know, I'd piggyback on that. The general dentist in all of us. You know, I was a general dentist in the Air Force for 7 years before I did oral surgery. So, you know, that component of it, and just knowing what the other professions and the other general dentists have to go through to restore a patient, and having that team approach. So I'm big on that, having everybody work as a team. And this gives a venue to that, you know, and an avenue for people to actually see what other people can offer. Everybody, each one of us, just being oral surgeons, we have different experiences on that too. So, you know, my experience is different from Rob's, and just us collaborating together on trouble patients or issues that we have in our practices is tremendous. And I mean, I met all these guys through this. I didn't know them before Seattle Study Club, and you know, it gives us an avenue to just nurture together. You know, it's crazy.
Absolutely.
There's you a guys clinical will... side of this, and there's a relationship side to why we come to this thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you guys will love this. My wife just texted me. She said, back up so I can see the cute one. Thanks.
Oh, you meant Rob.
I guess that was Rob. Hi, honey.
Tell him get pretzel out of the way.
Yeah, get pretzel out of the way.
I guess I was right in your way. But he's got good hair. He's got, like, really good hair. No, keep going. No, I want to expand a little bit more on that, because that's really why we keep coming back to this.
It is. I mean, you can go to different meetings. There's all sorts of meetings you can go get clinical data from, learn new techniques and things like that, but none of them have the feel of this. And you come to places like this, but it's not even the place you're at. It's just the feel of the people. And, you know, Darren said, we've gotten to know each other. You know, I've known Rob for how many years? I've climbed Mount Everest with this guy, or Mount Everest, Mount Rainier.
Well, that's felt like
Everest. Well, we were 50 years old. 50 years old. It felt like Everest.
You passed out, remember the level.
I've done the Grand Canyon with these guys. You develop these relationships, and it's all born out of this meeting. So it's far more. And then, you know, that's this. You get to go and hear, you know, world-class lecture after world-class speaker after world-class speaker after world-class speaker.
Yeah.
I think I was one of the original directors, so this is my 25th time around here, and it's been very interesting to see the evolution of our study club and the capabilities of our referring docs based on information we bring back, or like this year I've got five folks from my study club that are here listening to the same lectures. And so by us hearing the same presentations and working together to try to figure out, okay, I've got a patient that I think this is going to apply to. How do we do this together? How can we communicate better? All that kind of thing. The improvement in our overall dental community just attributed to SSC has been incredible.
Yeah.
Much more fun to practice with people that are on the same wavelength that you are.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm curious, you get a chance to hang out with these guys. How did you get here? What was your motivation ending up here?
So, as a first-year participant and guest, I think it's just based off relationships, going back to what these gentlemen have said, is I've been fortunate enough to know people and develop true relationships. I don't have the experience that these gentlemen do, so it's an honor to be able to sit at the same table with them. And I think amongst listening to world-class leaders, I think it goes back to relationships, and I've just been blessed to be able to create this on my own outside of residency, because in residency you have the safety net of the university sending you to conferences and symposiums, whereas this is a little bit more exclusive. And I think that if you don't have a healthy relationship with others, then you're not going to necessarily have the opportunity to come here. And that's why I'm just honored to be sitting at the round table with everybody.
What a
You'll
nice
get over
kid.
That.
Do we need to the collection plate now?
Yeah, there you go. Well, we were talking about this before.
We love that.
The fake tier.
Awesome. You know,
he's like, yes, sir, yes, sir. And you're like, okay, wait. Like, he's like a nice kid. Yeah. You know? So it's awesome. Well, one of the things I want to talk to you guys about, because you guys are thought leaders, world-class clinicians, you come here to make yourself better. One of the questions that a lot of kids have coming out of dental school, going to specialty programs, is the future of oral surgery. So I would love to know your perspective, your state of the union. And let me add one more component.
there has never been a more exciting time to be a dentist. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely.
Like, just crazy exciting now. So put those two things together for maybe a young dentist who's watching this, because we do have a lot of dental students watching this going, do I specialize? I don't know. Like, give us your thoughts. Who wants to start?
Yeah, I will. I mean, the career field for oral surgery, I mean, to me, it's the best profession in the world. I mean, we have that mix, like Rob said. We get to work with the dentist. We get to work with guys like Kirk. I mean, it's crazy. But no, just the gist of the surgery side of it, the trauma we get to do, the cosmetic stuff, the way we change people's lives, it's pretty amazing. And that just keeps building every year. You know, and you talk about the future of the dental side of it. You know, you're sitting in dental school thinking, hey, do I want to do oral surgery? And what's going to happen, you know, with specialists and things like that? I think that just the genetic engineering part of things is going to be crazy in the next 10 to 20 years. And I think, as much as we focus on implant dentistry and how the implants and the titanium and all these things, the components for those, I think eventually it's just going to be, you know, the surgery side of it's going to be taking the genetically engineered seed and make sure you just have the right side up, you know what I mean? And it's going to grow you a tooth in the matter of time it would be to secure an implant in the place with osteogenesis, you know. Yeah. So, and I think that's the future of those types of things for the dental world, you know, and in surgery realm. So I think, you know, if you're looking at doing oral surgery, it's the greatest ride out there. It really is.
Yeah.
You know, when I first got into oral surgery, I had three kids already. And I remember writing down on a prescription pad a note to my son saying, I'm really sorry that I'm going to miss so much of your stuff while you're growing up until I'm out of this time. Well, he's 40 now, and he and I talked about this just before we came down here. And he said, Dad, I know you wrote that. He said, I have never once regretted that you are where you are, who you've become. And that really meant a lot to me, really, because, you know, just by definition, you miss stuff
right.
that the kids have going on. And so I would say that I have not regretted a moment of being an oral maxillofacial surgeon. What these guys said, whether it's an implant, whether it's a trauma case like we saw today where people are losing teeth and bone and we're able to fix that, whether it's a big orthognathic case, restructuring the face, cosmetics, whatever it might be, it impacts people right where they live, which is their face and their smile.
Right, right. Absolutely.
For me, the funnest thing that we do is our skill with anesthesia, making people comfortable, managing fear, dealing with that, and you know, as long as we can protect that and keep that sacred and continue to deliver the safety of the anesthesia that we do, the future is limitless. But the other thing that I'm having great fun with right now is digital dentistry. Digital mm-hmm. dentistry is super fascinating for me. You know, intraoral scanning, merging that in various softwares, implant planning. We bought a 3D printer. We're having fun with that. Mm-hmm. And really, I just have to stop myself from shopping or I'll keep buying more stuff. I haven't really even figured out how to master any of it yet. But it's literally just a blast. Sometimes at the end of the day, I'll go, okay, I just have to turn it off. It'll be here tomorrow because yeah. I'm still messing with it.
That's yeah. awesome.
And it's really fun.
Yeah. yeah. And you guys,
I think on the oral surgery side, you kind of get your medical fix out of it.
Yeah.
When I couldn't decide whether or not I was going to go dentistry or medical when I was an undergrad. But I kept getting kind of pulled back to kind of orthodontics. So mm-hmm. I kind of went into a lot of people go into dental school, I mean, orthodontist kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the track I was heading on until I did my oral surgery rotation my third year at OU.
Yeah.
And really kind of started liking the oral surgery aspect because it had the more medical side to it. Mm-hmm. So you kind of get into, like Rob said, you get your anesthesia, you go beyond, and again, we're all dentists, and that's what we go through. We go through dental school to become an oral surgeon, and it's just a little bit different avenue that gives you just a little bit more whole body type of fix on it. Mm-hmm. Now, the anesthesia plays into it, the trauma plays into it, the facial surgery plays into it, yet we still do a lot of the intraoral stuff. I mean, right. most of our practice yeah. are still intraoral.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I would say it's a unique opportunity in career to be able to speak with both dentists and medical doctors or physicians, to be able to have the training of anesthesia, to be able to have the digital dentistry as a young millennial. But I think it's important to be able to speak to dentists, doctors, surgeons, radiologists, and also your patients. The fact that you have this huge knowledge bank and the fact that you're coming out and you get to interact with so many people, and you're not limited to one idea. But I have to admit, I respect these guys so much because
they are embracing technology.
Yeah.
It's easy for me to do it because that's just a part of my life. It's not that it's an advantage or disadvantage. It's just that's when I was born. And I think it says a lot to these guys that they're putting down the old ways that where they grew up, and they're learning this new fun avenue. I think that says a lot about their love for the field. So it's a nice little balance that I see me and also these guys, but we're both embracing the same things.
Yeah, and that's a great point you bring up. You talk about the avenue, fun avenue, but you guys all have different avenues. You know, I think that's one of the things that's important. As an oral surgeon, there's no one model. Your practices are wildly unique.
Yeah.
Can you speak to that? What you do, first of all, I don't think anyone else could do, but it's not like your buddies, right?
Right. I mean, that's the beauty of it. You know, I mean, because there's stuff that just getting together with these guys and learning what they do to implement it into the practice.
Yeah.
I mean, the wide range, and it all comes down to your training. I mean, his training is different than my training to all of us here, that, you know, depending on who your mentors were at the university, at the hospital setting that you're at. And I was military. So, I mean, my thing was facial cosmetic, reconstructive, and trauma. And the oral surgery was a given, you know?
Right.
And so when you have that magnitude of surgical talent around you that's, you know, training you, and then you get to share that, or each one of us have our own experience, and we assume that everybody had the same surgical background.
Right.
And you find out when you get out that you start immersing yourself with the other surgeons that, man, what he does, totally different. It's the same focus, same goal, but the way he does it, there's so much you can learn just by watching his technique. And, I mean, we've done that multiple times. We'll get together and talk about business. We'll talk about surgery. And I go, wait, show me how you do that, because I've been struggling with that for years.
Yeah.
And it's just a simple technique. He goes, why are you not doing it that way? I thought everybody did that way.
Mm-hmm.
So just being able to have that as a component for the experience level, yeah, my practice is totally different than these guys. You know,
yeah.
But at the same time, it's...
Because you would go crazy not having the resource of these people.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And not knowing that resource was available, I always say, you don't know what you don't know. And
right.
Knowing that I have that changes the whole component of everything.
And just one point of clarification, the way oral surgery is taught and practiced in Texas is far different than Oakley's experience at OU.
Now, tell us why.
Longhorns are better.
And that Red River Rivalry, how'd that turn out this past year?
There we go.
We're off topic now.
All right, well, back on topic.
We don't have anybody here from Georgia, though, do we?
No. All right, speak to the uniqueness thing, because I would love to know your perspectives on the uniqueness of the oral surgery model.
You know, I'm a solo practitioner, enjoy being a solo practitioner, made an effort at trying to assimilate another doc in my practice, and found out that I enjoy being a solo practitioner thoroughly. It's my way, and I think it's a pretty nice way, and the team's all heading the straight same direction, and it works for me to be able to do that.
Yeah.
I'm also a guy who is not going to win the record for working the most days in the year.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm trying to win the record for working the fewest days in a year.
Right. Right, because it's not about the days or the hours. It's how you engineer those days and hours.
Full days.
Right. And there's only so much you can take as a neural surgeon. I've had drinks with you on a Friday, and you got one eyeball going this way and one eye. You know, it's hard what you do. Would you agree?
Yeah.
And you've got to know your limits as a neural surgeon. Right?
It is physically demanding.
Yeah.
It is. You get worn out. And it's not like being an orthopedic surgeon or anything like that, but I mean, it's you know, you're worn out at the end of the day. Especially a long Friday when all you do is come in and do surgery all day. At least that's the way our model is. Is on Friday, you just come in and however many they've got lined up, and then you go home with no consultations or anything like that. And,
right.
You know, especially in the summertime, when you're into December, whenever the kids are out of school, you're doing a lot of wisdom teeth and things like that. It's wild.
Yeah.
So it's good.
Absolutely.
Not complaining at all.
No, but I just think the biggest thing is, do you practice in a group or you practice solo? You're in a group, right? How many do you have with you now, Mark?
We've got four, three partners and an associate, and we've got three offices.
Okay.
So it is a different dynamic, and they're all great guys, and we have a pretty shared vision, and yet we're very different personalities, so we all have different ways of kind of looking at problems, which actually is pretty healthy.
Yeah.
You know, it's not always the most comfortable thing, but it's pretty healthy to be able to work through together and be able to say, you know, I really didn't look at it that way. But yeah, it's a different dynamic, certainly than Rob has.
Yeah. And that aspect, though, you know, I literally moved to a different state. You know, I was military, so I was used to moving around, but I literally moved to Arkansas to buy a practice that was available, that to be a solo practitioner and never have a partner. You know, that was my goal, to move there. I'm the only oral surgeon for a large radius, and I'm going to have a practice to myself and never have a partner. And the only thing I could say is, you know, people listening out there that are in the process of transitioning like that, you have that focus, you know, and even he said, I went in to be an orthodontist, and all of a sudden I end up going a career field. You know, continue, even though you've got yourself in a track of this is what I'm going to do and this is what my dream is, to have just the insight to have an open mind. Because now I'm in a practice with a partner that was from that town. His dad's a dentist there, and he moved back to town.
Yeah.
And now we're in a process of going, hey, does he set up a practice next to me, or can we work together? And even though, like you said, personalities aren't exactly the same, it is amazing when you can come to a common agreement and work together and find out, wow, just the across the table working on big trauma cases or whatever, and you kind of see different techniques and see that you can merge together and work together and have an open mind amongst the two of you to make sure the working works well.
Right.
That all of a sudden you're in a practice with a partner, and these guys know I dreamed of never having a partner. That was my goal. I'm not gonna, nobody could work with me, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, so that at the same time, it worked out great. Now, you know, I have a partner for 2 years now that I never dreamed I would have had. So keeping an open mind on that stuff, I think, is really important.
Yeah. I want to know your thoughts. As you listen to these guys and you look at your own situation, what would you say?
I would say, you know...
What's your situation? I don't even know.
So my situation is I trained at the Medical University of South Carolina in Charleston. And I moved back home to a small town, Morgantown, where the Mountaineers are.
Yeah.
And opened up my own practice. My mentor was there, so out of respect, I asked him for a job. Mm-hmm. And he obviously had a very comfortable life, and his situation was fine, and he didn't need to have an associate, which I respect.
Right.
I get it. But I also wanted to follow my own brand, and so I did open up my own office. But I think it's important to show the respect before just opening an office. And each one of these guys has their own brand, whether it's a group, solo, whatever. And I just had a different way of wanting to treat patients from a hospital-based setting or academics. And so I felt in my hands I'm better off opening from scratch and trying to start my own practice.
Right, right. And I'm going to fly right into the eye of the storm, because this is one of the conversations going on. And we are all biased. They'll say that. We're all committed to doing the very best for the patient, also recognizing what we're best at, which would include interdisciplinary dentistry, you know. So let's just fly right into the conversation, interdisciplinary versus multidisciplinary. Trends that you're seeing, you know, you look at some of these dentists that are coming out. What are you seeing? What would you say? Add some perspective to the current climate and thought processes. And be honest. I would love you to be honest. You know,
you're most politically correct.
Yeah.
Choose the wisest words.
Right. Well, you know, the term that gets bandied about a lot is super dentist.
Yes.
And people coming out trying to do everything. First of all, I think that's a tremendous amount of pressure on anybody coming out of a dental school.
Right.
To be competent at the level that we're competent in each different discipline. And consistent with what we all believe in Seattle Study Club, we value the interactions with our general dentists and with our other specialists. We really value being able to have that time to sit down with them and say, well, how would you look at this? Because, say, for example, a periodontist or an endodontist, I don't know how to do their job to the level that they do. And so I need that information to make sure that we give the patient the very best treatment possible.
Right.
And the patients appreciate that.
It does come down to patient care. I mean,
yeah.
If you really, I always put my son or my daughter in that chair. And what would I do if it were my son or my daughter?
Right.
And I think that you need to do that as a practitioner. If that's your son or daughter in that chair, don't you want the best for that person? Mm-hmm. And so you seek out the best in each of the different disciplines and you provide that type of care for them. And I think that's where interdisciplinary trumps multidisciplinary.
Yeah, and I would say this confidently. Like, your practices aren't, you guys aren't like sitting around going, there's no patients today. Like, I got nothing to do. Right. You guys are insanely busy doing the right thing. I'll keep the conversation going because I don't want to interrupt, but I would love to know your thoughts.
So I think it's a value proposition. It's pretty simple. If what we do adds value for the patient and for any referral source, it's going to have staying power.
Right.
And so I always ask, you know, are we being easy to deal with? Have we made things as easy as possible for anybody to get a patient to us? Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to put up roadblocks and you don't want to send any. I borrow patients and I send them back better than I receive them.
That's awesome.
And that's what we tell the team and that's what we tell patients all the time. And, you know, as long as you stick to that, folks will find their way in our doors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the biggest thing, too, is you talk about he mentioned the super doc, you know, and we say that kind of in a demeaning way because we're saying that that super doc is not experienced as each one of those professional specialists are. So you're trying to take one person and say, I am an expert at all these things above and beyond everybody else because I'm doing it all. You know, and a lot of times it's easy for us to say and point fingers, and yeah, there are things in that person's scope of practice that maybe they're very good at. There's got to be, right?
Sure.
Because they're
right.
they're pretty good at a lot of things.
Yep.
Problem is you're pretty good at a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And what limits you is the ego of not knowing what you don't know. And I say that repeatedly. And, you know, the thing that you say, would you do this on your kids? But at the same time, my question is who is your backup plan?
Yeah.
And if your backup plan is your friendly oral surgeon or your periodontist or your orthodontist or your endodontist, that's your backup plan after you've done a procedure.
Right.
Then you shouldn't be doing that procedure.
Right,
I mean,
right.
It's as simple as that. All of us have gone through general surgery rotation, plastic surgery rotations, thoracic surgery rotations,
trauma.
OBGYN, trauma.
Sure.
And I've done more gallbladders than I've ever wanted to do in my life.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm probably well-trained in gallbladders at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't see me taking a weekend course to go enhance my skills in gallbladders so I can now offer that as an oral mouth special surgeon.
Right.
Right? So we have a tendency in our profession to think it's okay to go take a course and become, in our own minds, an expert in that process.
Yeah.
And I think we have to be careful with that because you don't see that in any other profession to where we're, why are we doing it? Is it for our own benefits, our patients' benefits, or is it because of the financial benefit?
Yeah.
You know, and we have to be careful with that. We really do.
We do. And I love having you here because without you here, it's very easy to put your generation in a box.
Yeah.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean? And say, oh, these people, but you've got fresh lenses coming into this. I want your thoughts on this.
Yeah, they all bring up excellent points. And I think the greatest feeling that I get is, you know, I'm sure we all have patients that come in that don't have dentists. They're self-referred. We get the x-rays and then they want us to comment on the PAs or, you know, the overall dentition. And I'm proud to say, yeah, I have the dental education,
right?
But you're better fit to go see a dentist.
Yeah.
And so that's a good feeling to be able to refer out to your colleagues. And it should be mutual. They should have the same feeling knowing that they're better trained. The other thing, too, is going back to your point, everybody's busy.
Right.
Right. You know, if you refer out wisdom teeth or implants and you know you're going to get a good result to your surgeons, there's still enough patients out there to take care
of.
And I think that if we get into the habit of being greedy, the person who ultimately gets in trouble is the patient, right?
Right.
The patient suffers.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so that's what I think we need to kind of pull back on is, yeah, you might be busy, you might be making more money, but if things go wrong, the patient just got injured and you could have prevented it if you would have pulled back a little bit, trusted the referrals, and just shared.
Right.
And the other thing in that regard, what I always tell folks, I'm getting a few more gray hairs now, so I'm having to learn how to communicate with younger docs and things like that. The tendency is, I'm going to send the hard cases to Rob, but we've never worked together.
Right.
You know, and so how do you just, go from that first kiss to closing the deal?
Right.
You got to practice. Mm-hmm. And the best way to practice is to do some simpler cases before you do get into the nuts and bolts of a really challenging case together.
Right.
And it's a point that can't be lost. You know,
right.
Okay, great, I can do the easy stuff, quote unquote, and then I'm going to refer you the really hard stuff, but we don't even know how to talk to each other.
Right.
Right. There's a real important value in working up to the hard cases,
right.
Understanding each other's capabilities, tendencies, likes and dislikes. You know, I send a letter and they said, well, why didn't you send a text? The owl hasn't arrived yet.
Absolutely.
The owl's still a little slow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another thing on that, come on. But first, I want to set things straight. He and I are the same age.
You have had a rough go.
That's
right.
I was
or sick. You're drinking some special.
I know. I was sick for the first 20 years of my life. So, you know, we are the same age.
It's that West Virginia spring water.
Yeah, to jump on that, you know, the thing of it is the perception of somebody that's young that's getting out that knows how to do basic surgery, or since we're talking about our profession, you know, and they'll start off with a simple set of wisdom teeth that they take out, and they're successful at it. And then they do another set like that, and then they try to advance to a more difficult. And eventually they get to a situation where they might be in trouble. And or they're looking at a situation in an x-ray and going, I think I can do this. Mm-hmm. And the best scenario in that situation, they get the teeth out.
Yeah.
Everything short of that is not a good situation.
Right.
You know, everything from a lawsuit to trouble with a patient or, you know, hurting somebody, you know. So right. So that's, you know, if you kind of think that in your mind, the best situation that I can get out of this is I'm going to complete the procedure. And that's right. The best situation and about best outcome. And if you can kind of keep that in your mind, if you're a young person thinking about doing this stuff, if you can handle all the complications and you know that anything short of the best situation of completing the procedure you can handle,
right,
then the world's your limit. And if you're really interested in those types of things, apply for the programs and right. go after that specialty.
Right, 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 right.
You know, if you want to do it, and I don't care. You know, somebody said to me once, I had got accepted oral surgery a couple times, and I turned down just because of family stuff and just not sure if I wanted to do it with the military, and I didn't want the commitment afterwards. And finally I said, you know, if I do this, I'm gonna go to surgery school, and then I'm going to have to owe the military back this many years. It's going to be 8 years before, you know, I'm even out in private practice.
Yeah.
And some wise lab tech said to me, how old are you going to be if you don't do it?
Yeah.
So instantly I'm going, that's something I want to do. I'm just going to do it. So yeah. If you've been in practice, you're doing these things, you want to do it. Jump in and do those things.
Well, you got to remember, everything is an investment for a return.
Right.
So the study just came out. You know what the number two profession in the United States is?
Oral surgery.
No, GP. Close. Number five, you know what it is?
Ortho.
What's number nine?
Oral surgery.
Two, five, and nine. Three of the top 10 jobs you could possibly have in the United States. Like, it is not a cheap profession.
Right.
But the return on investment, this is America. You get to choose your procedures. You can choose how you want to practice. We have a pretty good, Diamandis said a great, like, we complain a lot, but this is an amazing time.
It is.
Like,
yeah.
It is
first world problems.
Yeah.
First world problems.
Absolutely. You know, so I'm just always curious in the perspective of things when you come out and how it affects, you know, we're here to sharpen our thinking. And go back and apply it in our own lives. How much of that, my question to you, is arrogance of youth and really knowing yourself, self-awareness on both sides? Like, we were joking beforehand, when GPs come up to me and they go, I love endo, I go, no, you don't. And they go, no, I do. I go, no, you don't. Now, some do later on, but some of them come back and go, you know, you're right. Like, oh, there's endo, and then there's
endo. Yeah.
And same thing applies for oral surgery, you know what I mean? There are times where you, as a mentor, just go, I gotta let them come back. Do you know what I mean? And I've watched you. You've helped me. Like, sometimes you just gotta be patient, because the essential ingredient of an oral surgeon and a restorative dentist is trust. It's it's a trust factor, and it's gonna come back. And you guys have seen it over and over.
Just the relationships with specialists, kind of segueing into that, between specialists and any referral source, GPs, the medical field, whatever. You know, the door has got to always be open.
Right.
And tough things happen. We're dealing with humans. We don't get to control them. And as soon as you say, that didn't work out right, Pretzel, nope, now or never, you're referring to me or you're not. You know, folks drift. They come back. If you take great care of people, they'll come back. Right. I have Mig, who's been with me since 2 weeks after I opened my practice. Forever, I was terrified that was about to be the last new patient we were going to see. And I would always say, and she still makes fun of me whenever things are getting really hairy and busy, I would always say, you know, it's about to slow down around here. We've got new oral surgeons moving into the community. I mean, you know, it's 2008. It's about to slow down to recession. So just when I need to be both feet put back on the ground, that's what my team says to me. You know, Doc, it's about to slow down around here. And what I've found is I can't always predict, you know, where it's coming from next, what I did, what I didn't do, what I should have done. You know, I just put my head to the ground and just down and just go, go, go.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And if all of us have anything in common as OMSs, nobody's going to outwork us.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. No, 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 no.
We will not be.
We joke, you're a special breed. You have to have the DNA and the mindset.
I may not be the smartest guy in the group here, but I'm not going to be outworked. And if you put us all in a competition, we'd bleed before we quit.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Add to that. I want to know, you know, I want to know your perspective.
I think that's in our DNA.
Yeah.
It's we're driven. We're driven folks.
The orthodontist may be smarter than us, but you know, they saw some fork in the road and they went, "Man, not that way. I'm going this way."
Right. That is so true. So, you know, what would you say to somebody? I would love to know your advice. Somebody that's coming out of dental school thinking about specializing. What would you say to a young oral surgeon getting started? or thinking about getting started?
So specifically OMS or any specialty?
Oh, let's stick to OMS. And you can add any specialist, because I'm curious why you asked that.
Because I don't know about the other one.
Okay, I mean, I can't comment about
what their whole life scenario is. I have some idea.
Let's say there's a kid watching this. He's on the fence, or she's on the fence. You know, oral surgery,
are we trying to convince them to apply today?
Well, just what would you say? Knowing what you know.
Do it.
I think it would be important for him to shadow somebody.
Yeah.
To get to know what the profession really entails.
Right.
Learn some of the nuances. Learn what their time commitment and effort commitment is actually going to be.
Right.
Because if they get into it and it doesn't meet their expectations, then they're not going to be happy. But for all of us, it exceeded our expectations. Yeah.
Right.
We knew we were going to have to work hard, and we loved doing that. Yeah. So for us, it was the right choice. But I think they just need to be able to make sure they've been exposed enough before they make that decision. And then, as Rob said, if you're close to that point, do it. You know,
right,
apply get in.
But I think it's so important. It's a lot of people, when they're applying to dental school, things like they'll go shadow general dentists and things like that. I don't really think that too many of them spend too much time in a surgical practice or anything like that. So if you're, especially the guys that are already in dental school, you're trying to figure out, do I want to take this path?
Right.
I would say absolutely go work a summer with an oral surgeon. Go do an externship. A lot of the programs have externships where you can go down, you can be with the residents, you can spend a few weeks with them, you can take call with them. You need to know that that's your lifestyle and that's what it's going to be like.
Right.
But you need to have the private practice side too, because a lot of guys will get into it and think that it's all the hospital-based stuff. And when you come out in private practice, the vast majority of us are not doing a lot in the hospital. Darren does.
Yeah.
He does a lot of trauma. I do a little bit of trauma, but it's not what we did in residency. A lot of it is.
Okay? Yeah.
And some guys are disappointed it's not going to be there. You need to know that. Okay. Or a lot of guys think that it's purely just like an office is, and then they get to residency and it's like, well, where'd this come from? Mm-hmm. So I think it's important that you see both sides of that. You need to spend time with the residents in the hospital. You need to spend time with a private practitioner and see both sides of it.
And once you jump into it, once you made that decision where your perception and your expectation is the same,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And you say, okay, my expectations here, my perception of what it is, they match now.
Yeah.
You make that decision. Now it's time to jump in 100%, you know, and be a sponge when you're in there. But I wouldn't approach an oral surgery residency program as, holy cow, it's 4 to 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
You need to go, it's this rotation.
It's unfortunate.
It's this rotation. It's this rotation. You know, because when all said and done, you go, oh my God, you know, you look at the 4 to 6 years, and 4 to 6 years go like that.
Right.
And you sit back going, did I take advantage of all of it? And, you know, the majority of people that either don't make it through the program or aren't successful because they're removed from the programs.
Right.
It wasn't because they couldn't do it. It was more because the perception and their expectations were different.
Right.
You know, and if you can match that up and then just take each one as a, you know, and work as a team with the rest of your groups, and, you know, it's no longer trying to be cutthroat. You need to be a sponge.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's awesome.
If you know what you're getting into in residency, it's a blast.
It's a blast.
You're good. You're good. Did you find that to be true?
I did. Yeah. I would like to comment on Darren and Rich said. I think, you know, I get approached on social media a lot, you know, in terms of, do I want to do dentistry or oral surgery, maxillofacial surgery? And my follow-up question is, have you shadowed and have you done any externships? And I think the misconception is when we see lecturers on YouTube or these symposiums as someone in dental school, it looks hot, it looks sexy, it looks cool, and I don't think they truly understand that this is not something you just do.
Right.
This is a huge sacrifice. This is, you know, when you go to the interviews, you need to be staring at that director or that chairman's eyes with confidence saying, I want to be a surgeon. And I happen to do 8 externships and because I wanted to make sure that I either knew what I was going to do and move forward. And then going back to his point, you don't just spin the globe and choose a specialty. And I think that's another issue with young dental students is that they don't go seek. They want everything given to them and they're not proactive enough. And so I think it's important to not just surgery, but to go do your orthodontist, perio, general dentistry. And then you can really make a decision and don't listen to your other friends. Like you should, you got to listen to your heart and what you want to do because, you know, I'm not married or with kids, but these gentlemen probably had kids. And
that was a plug, ladies. That was a plug.
You can find him on Twitter.
He's hoping a few of you swipe left.
What is your cell phone number again?
304.
Our phones are blowing up.
This is the Facebook.
Wow.
Look at all the likes.
Facebook has crashed.
No, it's a lot of hearts.
But, you know, the thing that they don't talk about is whether you're in a relationship with kids or single during residency, it's a very lonely time because of the sacrifice.
Yeah.
And it's a very real feeling. And so I think that's something you have to maturely make a decision, because it's not 4 years of off and on. It's 4 to 6 years of heavy sacrifice, and your friends and family ultimately feel it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I thought it was a blast. I didn't think 1 minute of it was a sacrifice. Seriously, I love my residency. I absolutely love the whole time.
Yeah, well,
I trained the same place he did. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, in addition to choosing the right profession for you, how important is the learning piece of this? You guys, this is a big week. I mean, this is, you're out of your practice. You all run your own respective clubs. Like, it was a valuable piece in your growth and learning. Give us a perspective on that, because some of us, you know, or some people watching think this is too hard, I don't want to run a club, blah, blah, blah. You know, how important is this piece to your journey?
The minute I got out of the military and I bought a practice, it was, would be considered mid-season of Seattle Study Club. I mean, I got out and it was, you know, the agenda was already going. And I couldn't get to, you know, I went to the oral surgery meeting, AMOS meeting, purposely to go talk to Greg Tice at Seattle Study Club. That's the reason why I went, because I knew he was going to be there. And I said, hey, I want to do this. The area needs it. I mean, the thing that the education level they got from the other providers in that area that tried to set it would be one course, pizza and beer would be served, and the video would play in the background, and they'd socialize, and that was their CE for the night.
Right.
You know, and they didn't have to pay for a cent. They weren't involved with it. And I told Greg, you know, I want to start. And he says, okay, well, next year's season will, you know, basically you start the school year. And so I'm like, no, man, I want to start this. I want to start now. In fact, can we get a program together? And I want January 1st, I want to be rolling as opposed to next September.
Right.
And so, you know, I started a half a year program in the beginning because I saw the need. And there's not enough of that. There's not enough of the education to get people on the page of being able to collaborate, be able to share their ideas with other people that are their competition.
Right.
They're not their competition. I mean, he said it awesome. The fact that, you know, there's enough patients, enough work to go around. Sure. You just need to educate the society that, you know, a private practitioner that's not part of a corporate, you know, run in entity that's able to provide the care at the level that we provide it. You can't handle the truth, though.
That's right.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, you got it. So, but at the same time, you know, that level and being able to share that, it's unmatched by anything, you know. So,
yeah.
There's all sorts of different study clubs out there, and none of them do what this thing does.
Right.
It is such an integral part of our, and like I say, it's our main marketing tool for the practice. It is. Mm-hmm. That's where it all starts. It's also one of the main things that allows us to do the clinical dentistry that we like to do.
Right.
Because, as they've all said, it puts you all on the same page. And I don't know too many other avenues that allow you to get 40 other people that you work with all on the same page. So it's a very unique tool.
Yeah. Years ago, when we first started, we had a very well-known, internationally famous clinician come, and what he was talking about was just in another universe from where we were all practicing. And recently, my restorative advisor, who now is faculty for his courses, came up and he said, you know, when he came here first, I thought, how am I ever going to do this? And he said, now it's my daily bread and butter.
Wow.
And that's a huge testimony to a Seattle Study Club.
I've had so many docs in my club have come up and said over the past few years, you understand that the way I practice dentistry is vastly different than what I used to do before I started this club.
Yeah. Right.
I've gotten that just over a 7-year
period.
And
it's a journey. It's not, you don't come to two or three meetings and everything's changed and everything's great. It's been a journey over 20 years.
Right, and I know you guys all well enough. It can't be a get. You don't start a club to get.
No.
You know, you go into it fully realizing this is
a give.
It's a give.
Yeah.
For sure.
It is a give.
Yeah, there's no one-to-one, I give you this, you give me this back. You just have to be committed to growing other people, growing their thinking, and doing what's best for our patients, and staying on that learning edge together.
You know, I think it's natural. when you start this to think, okay, this is a great way to get referrals and those kind of things. But you learn very quickly that it's not about that at all. It's about relationships.
Right.
And relationships are important when something goes wrong.
Yeah.
Because the last thing you want is for somebody to try to throw you under the bus. The best thing you want is for your team of referring dentists and specialists to all get together and figure out how to make that better for the patient. And that's where relationships really pay off.
Yeah.
It's rewarding. I mean, it's the key word.
Yeah.
No, it's fun. And then here I've got a new generation of young docs that are, you know, eager and super fun. And, you know, they laugh a lot more than the old docs. They're having a good time.
Yeah.
That just energizes me even more.
It does. All right. Yeah.
So what you guys are saying is oral surgery is not dead. I just love watching you guys and what you guys have done. And any last thoughts you'd add on the future?
And
Dad?
No, he said ass.
Dad.
No, man, you're always the wise man.
Yeah.
You're the words of wisdom, dude.
Yeah, he is, though. You're the calmest one of the group.
No, I
said it. Pretzel said it right at the beginning. We've got the best job in the whole wide world.
Yeah, we do.
And literally, at the end of the day, I'll bust my backside with every, you know, the same work ethic all these guys have. I literally have to shut my computer off and say, time to go home.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even at 3 a.m. with the trauma.
Which is a whole nother conversation.
Whole nother conversation for another time.
Absolutely. Well, you're here first here. I just want to thank you guys, not only for being incredible human beings, great friends, giving us your time, your expertise, and most importantly, giving back. And that's what all of you guys do so incredibly well. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. Check these guys out, Seattle Stellarium Symposium. If you're not here, my first question is why not? Because you got to be here.
Why not?
This is fun, right?
This is awesome.
Awesome. Yeah, if you're in the greater Austin area, we probably have room in the study club.
Absolutely. You got to check it out. So thank you guys for watching the Best Practices Show. If you enjoyed today, which I know you did, do us a favor, just hit the share button. And we will see you next time on the Best Practices Show. Keep watching. Thank you.